Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. This Grapevine Edition volume gathers major writings by Immanuel Kant, a pivotal figure of modern philosophy whose work reshaped debates about knowledge, morality, religion, politics, and aesthetics. Best known for the Three Critiques, Kant asked how human reason is possible, where its limits lie, and what it can legitimately claim about the world. The Critique of Pure Reason investigates the conditions that make experience and science possible, arguing that the mind actively structures appearances through concepts and forms of intuition. The Critique of Practical Reason and later moral writings develop a rigorous account of duty and autonomy, presenting ethics as grounded in rational self-legislation rather than outcomes or inclinations. Alongside these landmarks, collections labeled complete works typically include shorter essays that apply Kantian ideas to enlightenment, history, peace, and judgment. Read together, these texts offer a systematic picture of Kant's project to secure the authority of reason while preventing it from overreaching into unfounded metaphysics. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, how knowledge is possible. The framework of transcendental idealism. A central thread across Kant's major works is the question of how objective knowledge can arise from a finite human standpoint. In the Critique of Pure Reason, Kant proposes that experience is not a passive reception of data, but a synthesis, shaped by the mind's own contributions. Space and time function as forms of intuition, organizing sensory input, while the understanding supplies basic concepts, often discussed as categories, that make judgments and scientific claims possible. This approach explains why mathematics and natural science can achieve necessity and universality, yet it also places boundaries on what we can know. Kant distinguishes appearances, the world as it is experienced under these conditions, from things in themselves which cannot be directly known by theoretical reason. The result is not skepticism but a disciplined account of limits, metaphysical claims about the soul, the cosmos as a totality, or God exceed what theoretical knowledge can establish. Kant's framework therefore aims to protect empirical science and everyday objectivity while deflating speculative certainty. Readers encounter a model of reason that gains authority precisely by acknowledging the conditions under which it operates and the points where it must remain silent. Secondly, the architecture of reason, judgments, categories, and the role of critique, Kant's project is often described as a critique of reason, meaning an investigation of reason's powers, scope, and rightful use. This topic highlights how Kant analyzes the building blocks of thinking, judgments, inference, and the principles that guide explanation. In the theoretical domain, he examines how the understanding unifies perceptions into objects through rules, and how reason seeks completeness through ideas that aim at total explanation. These aspirations generate both progress and illusion. Reason naturally tries to extend its principles beyond experience, producing classic metaphysical disputes that cannot be settled by evidence. Kant's critical method proposes that instead of arguing endlessly about such claims, we should ask what would have to be true for them to be knowable at all. By shifting from objects to conditions of possible experience and possible justification, Kant offers a systematic way to diagnose errors, clarify legitimate concepts, and refine methods of inquiry. The critical stance also encourages intellectual humility without abandoning ambition. It tells the reader when a claim is constitutive, shaping how objects can be known, versus merely regulative, providing guidance for inquiry without guaranteeing facts about reality. This careful architecture of reason is one reason Kant remains central to debates in epistemology, philosophy of science, and metaphysics. Thirdly, moral autonomy and duty, the foundations of practical reason, in the Critique of Practical Reason and related moral writings, commonly included in comprehensive editions, Kant argues that ethics is grounded in rational agency rather than in happiness, social convention, or calculation of outcomes. The core idea is autonomy. To be moral is to act from a law one can rationally will, not merely from impulses, fear, or external authority. Kant develops the notion of a categorical imperative, a test for whether a maxim of action can be universalized without contradiction and whether it respects persons as ends rather than mere means. This framework aims to secure the dignity of persons by rooting moral worth in the motive of duty, not in the success of results. Practical reason also has its own standpoint, which differs from theoretical knowledge. While we may not be able to prove certain metaphysical claims as facts, moral agency commits us to ideas that support responsibility, such as freedom understood as self-determination. The practical perspective, therefore, gives morality a firm footing without reducing it to sentiment or utility. Readers gain a demanding but empowering picture of ethics. Moral constraints are not arbitrary limits, but expressions of what it means to be a rational, accountable agent among other agents. Fourthly, freedom, religion, and the limits of metaphysics. Kant's writings frequently return to tensions between human longing for ultimate answers and the strict demands of justification. A recurring theme is how to think about freedom, God, and the moral meaning of the world without turning these ideas into speculative knowledge claims. Kant argues that theoretical reason cannot establish transcendent objects beyond experience, yet he does not treat religious or metaphysical concepts as meaningless. Instead, he explores their practical and regulative roles. Freedom, for example, is not presented as an empirical fact, but as a necessary presupposition for moral responsibility. Likewise, ideas about God or an overarching moral order can be approached as postulates of practical reason, supporting hope that moral striving is not futile and that virtue and happiness can be coherently related. This treatment reorients theology and metaphysics, rather than proofs that aim to compel assent. Kant emphasizes the ethical significance of these ideas and the dangers of dogmatism. The theme also clarifies why critique is protective. It blocks overconfident claims that invite disillusionment, while preserving a space for faith understood as rational commitment tied to moral life. Readers see how Kant balances rigor with existential concern. Lastly, enlightenment, politics, and judgment. Applying reason to public life, beyond the critiques, comprehensive Kant collections often include essays on enlightenment, history, right, and peace, as well as works connected to aesthetic and teleological judgment. Together, they show Kant applying his critical philosophy to the social world. In political thought, Kant links legitimate authority to principles that free and equal persons could rationally endorse, stressing the importance of lawful institutions, civic freedom, and constraints on coercion. His vision of perpetual peace, widely discussed in political philosophy, frames peace not as a mere ideal, but as a project requiring republican governance, international norms, and a cosmopolitan perspective that recognizes individuals as participants in a broader moral community. In Aesthetics and Judgment, Kant analyzes how we make evaluative claims that are not straightforwardly factual, yet aspire to shared validity, such as judgments of beauty. He also considers purposiveness in nature as a way of organizing inquiry without asserting metaphysical design as knowledge. These applied writings illuminate the practical reach of Kant's system. Reason is not just an inner faculty, but a public tool for critique, reform, and communication. Readers come away with a sense of Kant as both a theorist of limits and a defender of enlightened public reasoning. In conclusion, this volume is best suited for readers who want direct engagement with foundational texts in modern philosophy, advanced students, scholars in the humanities, and serious self-learners willing to move slowly and reread challenging arguments. It also serves readers interested in ethics, political theory, religion, or the philosophy of science who want to trace how many later debates were reframed by Kant's questions about conditions, limits, and justification. The benefit to the reader's life comes from learning a disciplined way to evaluate claims, distinguishing what can be known from what must be assumed, clarifying reasons versus rhetoric, and treating moral agency as grounded in autonomy rather than mood or pressure. Kant's insistence that persons must be respected as ends can sharpen everyday decisions about honesty, responsibility, and fair treatment. Compared with many single-volume introductions, a collected edition is worth buying because it lets you see the system as an interconnected project, epistemology, ethics, aesthetics, and politics speaking to one another. It also allows readers to verify interpretations by consulting primary sources rather than relying on summaries. If you want a demanding but enduring toolkit for thinking, this collection offers unusual long-term value. If you would like to support Immanuel Kant, you can buy the books through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.